Why?
Because I would like to know. Irene read between the words. Hussar wanted the information before her father or siblings.
To what end?
When a power broker of the realms goes missing, it is not a cause for celebration, especially one who destroys palaces and takes cities on a whim.
Fear?
Well hidden. But Hussar was at least considering the possibility that Aelin Galathinius might set her sights beyond her own lands. But to play spy for Hussar?
You think the library attack has something to do with this?
I think that perhaps Lord Westfall and Captain Philique are aware of how to play the game. And if they make it appear as if a threat from Parrington is in our midst, why wouldn't we consider allying with them?
Irene didn't think they played those sorts of games at all.
You think they're doing this to help Aelin Galathinius? Or because she is missing and they're frightened of losing a powerful ally themselves?
That's what I would like to know. Along with the Queen's location, or their best guess.
Irene made herself hold the princess's stare.
And why should I help you?
A Bastcat's smile. Beyond the fact that we are dear friends.
Is there nothing I could give you to sweeten the offer? Lovely Irene. I have all I need.
Yes, but you do remember that the Armadas are mine, the Narrow Sea is mine, and crossing it may be very, very difficult to those who forget.
Irene did not dare back down. Didn't dare break the princess's dark gaze.
Hussar knew. Knew or guessed that Irene wanted to leave. And if she did not aid the princess, Irene had no doubt that as fiercely as Hussar loved, so too could her need for retribution drive her. Enough to make sure Irene never left these shores.
I shall see what I can learn,
Irene said, refusing to soften her voice.
Good,
Hussar declared, and cleared the figurines off the map with a wipe of her hand, scattering them into a drawer and shutting them inside.
To begin, why don't you join me at Tahome's feast the night after tomorrow? I can keep caution occupied if it will clear the way for you.
Her stomach turned over. She'd forgotten that the Sea Goddess's holiday was in 2 days. Frankly, there were holidays nearly every other week, and Irene participated when she could. But this one... With her fleet, with the Narrow Sea, and several others under her jurisdiction, Hussar would certainly be honoring Tahome. And the Khaganate would certainly not fail to honor the Lady of the Great Deep either. Not when the oceans had been good to them these centuries. So Irene didn't dare object. Didn't let herself so much as hesitate before Hussar's piercing eyes.
As long as you don't mind me wearing the same dress from the other night,
she said as casually as she could, plucking at her oversized shirt.
No need,
Hussar countered, smiling broadly.
I have something already selected.
Chapter 19
Kaol kept moving his toes long after Irene had left. He wriggled them inside his boots, not quite feeling them. Just enough to know they were moving. However Irene had done it. He didn't tell Nezrin when she returned before dinner. No sign of the Vog to report. And he'd only quietly explained that he was making enough progress with Irene that he'd like to put off tomorrow's visit to her family until another day. She'd seemed a tad crestfallen, but had agreed. That cool mask slipping back over her face within a few blinks. He kissed her when she'd walked by to dress for dinner. He grabbed her by the wrist and tugged her down and kissed her once. Brief, but thorough. She'd been surprised enough that by the time he'd pulled away, she hadn't so much as laid a hand on him.
Get ready, he told her, motioning to the room.
With a backward glance at him, a half-smile on her mouth, Nezrin obeyed. Kaol stared after her for a few minutes, shifting his toes in his boots. There had been no heat in it. The kiss? No real feeling. He expected it.
He'd practically shoved her away these weeks. He didn't blame her at all for the surprise. He was still flexing his toes in his boots when they arrived at dinner. Tonight, he'd ask the Coggin for an audience, again, morning or no, protocol or no. And then he'd warn the man of what he knew. He would request it before Irene's usual arrival, in case they lost time, which seemed to be an occurrence. It had been 3 hours today. 3. His throat was still raw, despite the honeyed tea Irene had made him drink until he was nearly sick. Then she'd made him exercise, many of the movements ones she had to assist him with. Rotating his hips, rolling each leg from side to side, rotating his ankles and feet in circles, all designed to keep the blood flowing to the muscles beginning to atrophy, all designed to recreate the pathways between his spine and brain, she said. She'd repeated the sets over and over until an hour had passed, until she was swaying again on her feet, and that glassy look had crept over her eyes. Exhaustion. For while she'd been rotating his legs, ordering him to move his toes every now and then, she'd sent tingles of her magic through his legs, bypassing his spine entirely. Little pinpricks in his toes, like swarms of fireflies had landed on him. That was all he felt, even as she kept trying to patch up those pathways in his body. What little she could do now, with the small progress she'd made hours ago. But all that magic. When Irene had swayed after his last set, he'd called for Kaja, ordered an armed carriage for the healer. Irene, to his surprise, didn't object, though he supposed it was hard to when the healer was nearly asleep on her feet by the time she left, Kaja supporting her. Irene only murmured something about being on his horse again after breakfast, and was gone. But perhaps the luck he'd had that afternoon was the last of it. Hours later, the Coggin was not at dinner. He was dining in private with his beloved wife, they said. The unspoken rest of it lay beneath the words. Mourning was taking its natural course, and politics would be set aside. Kaol had tried to look as understanding as possible. At least Nezrin seemed to be making some headway with Sartak, even if the other royals had already grown bored with their presence. So he dined. So he kept wriggling his toes within his boots, and did not tell anyone, even Nezrin, long after they'd returned to their suite and he'd tumbled off to bed. He awoke with the dawn, found himself eager to wash and dress, found himself eating breakfast as quickly as he could, while Nezrin only raised her brows. But she, too, was off early to meet Sartak atop one of the palace's 36 minarets. There was some holiday tomorrow, to honor one of the 36 gods those minarets each represented. Their sea goddess, Tahome. There would be a ceremony at sunrise down by the docks, with all the royals, even the Coggin, attending to lay wreaths into the water. Gifts for the Lady of the Great Deep, Nezrin had said. Then a grand feast at the palace come sundown. He'd been indifferent about his own holidays back in Otterlin. Found them outdated rites to honor forces and elements his ancestors could not explain. And yet the buzz of activity, the wreaths of flowers and seashells being raised within the palace to at last replace the white banners, the scent of shellfish simmering in butter and spices. It intrigued him, made him see a bit clearer, brighter, as he wheeled through the busy palace toward the courtyard. The courtyard itself was a melee of arriving and departing vendors, bearing food and decorations and what seemed to be performers, all to beseech their sea goddess for mercy, as the late summer gave way to annual violent storms that could rip apart ships and entire towns on the coastline. Kaol scanned the courtyard for Irene, flexing his toes. He spotted his horse and her mare alongside it in the few pens by the east wall. But no sign of her. She'd been late yesterday, so he waited until a lull in the deliveries before he motioned the stable hands to help him mount. But it was the guard from yesterday, the one who'd aided him most, who came forward when the mare was brought over. Shen, Irene had called him. She'd greeted the guard as if she knew him well, Shen said nothing. Though Kaol knew every guard in this palace spoke an assortment of languages beyond Halha, only offering a nod of greeting, which Kaol found himself returning before he silently mounted, his arms straining with the effort to haul himself upward. But he made it, perhaps easier than yesterday, earning what he could have sworn was a wink of approval from Shen before the guard sauntered back to his post. Shutting out what that did to his chest, Kaol buckled the straps on his brace and surveyed the chaotic courtyard and open gates beyond. The guards inspected every wagon, every piece of paper that confirmed a royal order had been placed for the goods they bore. Good. Regardless of whether he'd spoken to the Khagan personally, at least someone had warned the guard to be careful. Perhaps caution. The sun drifted higher, raising the heat with it. Still, Irene did not come. A clock chimed deep in the palace. An hour late. The mayor turned skittish, impatient beneath him, and he patted her thick, sweaty neck, murmuring. Another 15 minutes passed. Kaol studied the gates, the street beyond. No word of alarm had come from the Torre. But staying still, just waiting here? He found himself snapping the reins, tapping the horse's flank to launch it into a walk. He'd marked the path Irene had taken yesterday. Perhaps he'd run into her on her way over here. Antica was crawling with vendors and people setting up for tomorrow's holiday, and those already toasting to the Lady of the Great Deep, filling the taverns and eating rooms lining the streets, musicians playing at each one. It took him nearly twice as long to get to the Torre's owl-adorned gates, though part of that slowness was due to his scanning for Irene on every crammed street and passing alley. But he found no sign of the healer. He and his horse were sweating when they rode through the Torre gates, the guards smiling at him, faces he'd marked from yesterday's lesson. How many times had he seen such a greeting in Otterlan? Taken it for granted. He'd always ridden through the black iron gates to the glass palace without hesitation, without really doing more than noting who was stationed there and who wasn't looking up to snuff. He'd trained with those men, learned about their families and lives. His men. They had been his men. So Kaol's own answering smile was tight, and he couldn't stand to meet their bright eyes for more than a passing glance as he rode into the Torre courtyard, the scent of lavender wrapping around him. But he paused a few feet in, wheeled his mare around, and asked the guard closest, "Has Irene Towers left today?" Like those at the Khagan's palace, each of the Torre's guards was fluent in at least three languages. Halha, the tongue of the northern continent, and the language of the lands to the east. With visitors from all over Irelia, those at the Torre gates had to be fluent in the three common tongues. The guard before him shook his head, sweat sliding down his dark skin in the rippling heat.
"Not yet, Lord Westfall."
Perhaps it was rude to seek her out, when she was likely too busy with other things to immediately tend to him. She'd mentioned other patients, after all. With a nod of thanks, he again turned the roan mare toward the Torre, and was about to aim for the courtyard to its left, when an ancient voice said from below, "Lord Westfall, good to see you out and about."
Hafiza.
The healer on high stood a few feet away, a basket draped over her thin arm, and two middle-aged healers flanking her. The guards bowed, and Kaol inclined his head.
"I was looking for Irene," he said by way of greeting.
Hafiza's white brows rose. "Did she not come to you this morning?" Unease tightened his gut.
"No, though perhaps I missed her."
One of the healers at Hafiza's side stepped forward and murmured to the healer on high,
"She is abed, my lady."
Hafiza now raised her brows at the woman.
"Still?"
A shake of the head.
"Drained. Irisha checked on her an hour ago. She was asleep."
Hafiza's mouth tightened, though Kaol had a feeling he knew what she was about to say. felt guilty enough before the crone spoke.
Our powers can do great things, Lord Westfall, but they also demand a great cost. Irene was...
She sought the words, either from not using her native tongue or to spare him from further guilt.
She was asleep in the carriage when she arrived last night. She had to be carried to her room.
He cringed. Hafiza patted his boot, and he could have sworn he felt it in his toes.
It is of no concern, my lord. A day of sleep, and she will be back at the palace tomorrow morning.
If tomorrow is a holiday,
he volunteered,
she can have the day off.
Hafiza chuckled.
You do not know Irene very well at all, if you think she considers these holidays to be days off.
She pointed at him.
Though if you want the day off, you should certainly tell her, because she'll likely be knocking at your door come sunrise.
Kaol smiled, even as he gazed at the tower looming overhead.
It is a restorative sleep,
Hafiza supplied.
Utterly natural. Do not let it burden you.
With a final look at the pale tower high above, he nodded and wheeled his horse back to the gates.
May I escort you anywhere?
Hafiza's smile was bright as the midday sun.
You certainly may, Lord Westfall.
The healer on high was stopped every block by those wishing to merely touch her hand or have her touch them. Sacred, holy, beloved. It took them 30 minutes to get even half a dozen blocks from the Torre. And though he offered to wait while Hafiza and her companions entered the modest home on a quiet street, they waved him off. The streets were clogged enough to deter him from exploring, so Kaol soon headed back toward the palace. But even as he steered his horse through the crowds, he found himself glancing to that pale tower, a behemoth on the horizon, to the healers sleeping within. Irene slept for a day and a half. She hadn't meant to, had barely been able to rouse herself long enough to see to her needs and wave off Irisha when she'd come to prod her, to make sure she was still alive. The healing yesterday, 2 days ago she realized as she dressed in the gray light before dawn, had decimated her. That bit of progress, the nosebleed afterward, had taken its toll. But his toes had moved, and the pathways she'd sent her magic floating along, dots of light darting through him. Damaged, yes, but if she could slowly start to replace those frayed tiny communicators within him. It would be long and hard, yet. Irene knew it was not guilt alone that had her rising so early on Tahome's day. He was from Otterlin. She doubted he'd care if he got the day off. Dawn had barely broken by the time Irene slipped into the Torre courtyard and paused. The sun had crept over the compound walls, spearing a few shafts of golden light into the purplish shadows. And in one of those shafts of sunlight, the faint strands of gold in his brown hair gleaming.
She wakes, Lord Kaol said.
Irene strode for him, gravel crunching loudly in the drowsy dawn.
You rode here?
All by myself.
She only arched a brow at the white mare beside his.
And you brought the other horse.
A gentleman through and through.
She crossed her arms, frowning up at where he sat mounted.
Any further movement?
The morning sun lit his eyes, turning the brown into near gold.
How are you feeling?
Answer my question, please.
Answer mine.
She gaped at him a bit, debated scowling.
I'm fine, she said, waving a hand. But have you felt any further?
Did you get the rest you needed?
Irene gaped at him truly this time.
Yes.
She scowled now too.
And it's none of your concern.
It certainly is.
He said it so calmly, with such male entitlement.
I know that in Otterlin women bow to whatever men say,
But here, if I say it's none of your business, then it isn't.
Kaol gave her a half smile. So, we're back to the animosity today.
She reined in her rising shriek.
We are not back to anything. I'm your healer, and you are my patient, and I asked you about the status of your...
If you're not rested,
he said, as if it were the most rational thing in the world.
Then I'm not letting you near me.
Irene opened and closed her mouth.
And how will you decide that?
Slowly, his eyes swept over her. Every inch. Her heart thundered at the long look, the relentless focus.
Good color,
he said.
Good posture. Certainly good sass.
I'm not some prize horse, as you said yesterday.
2 days ago?
She braced her hands on her hips.
I'm fine. Now, how are you?
Each word was accentuated. Kaol's eyes danced.
I'm feeling quite well, Irene. Thank you for asking.
Irene? If she wasn't inclined to leap onto his horse and strangle him, she might have contemplated how the way he said her name made her toes curl. But she hissed.
Don't mistake my kindness for stupidity. If you have had any progress or regressions, I will find them out.
If this is your kindness, then I'd hate to see your bad side.
She knew he meant the words in jest, yet her back stiffened. He seemed to realize it and leaned down in his saddle.
It was a joke, Irene. You have been more generous than... It was a joke.
She shrugged, heading for the white horse. He said, perhaps an attempt to steer them back toward neutral ground,
How are the other healers faring after the attack?
A shiver crawled up her spine as she grabbed the mare's reins, but made no move to mount. Irene had offered to help with the burial, but Hafiza had refused, telling her to save her strength for Lord Westfall. But it hadn't stopped her from visiting the death chamber beneath the Torre 2 days ago, from seeing the desiccated body laid out on the stone slab in the center of the rock-hewn chamber, the leathery, drained face, the bones that jutted out from paper-thin skin. She'd offered up a prayer to Silba before she'd left, and had not been awake yesterday when they'd buried her in the catacombs far beneath the tower. Irene now frowned up at the tower looming overhead. Its presence always such a comfort, and yet, since that night in the library, despite Hafiza's and Arisha's best efforts, there had been a hush in the halls, the tower itself, as if the light that had filled this place had guttered.
They fight to retain a sense of normalcy,
Irene said at last.
I think in defiance against whoever did it.
Hafiza and Arisha have led by example, staying calm, focused, smiling when they can.
I think it helps the other girls not to be so petrified.
If you want me to help with another lesson, he offered, my services are at your disposal.
She nodded absently, running her thumb over the bridle. Silence fell for a long moment, filled with the scent of swaying lavender and the potted lemon trees. Then,
were you really planning on barging into my room at dawn?
Irene turned from the patient white mare.
You don't seem the type to laze in bed.
She raised her brows.
Though if you and Captain Philique are engaging in...
You can come at dawn if you wish.
She nodded, even though she usually loved sleeping.
I was going to check on a patient before I visited you, since we tend to lose time.
He didn't reply, so she went on.
I can meet you back at the palace in 2 hours if you...
I can go with you. I don't mind.
She dropped the reins, surveyed him, his legs.
Before we go, I should like to do some exercises with you.
On the horse?
Irene strode to him, gravel hissing beneath her shoes.
It's actually a successful form of treatment for many, not just those with spinal injuries.
The movements of a horse during riding can improve sensory processing, among other benefits. She unbuckled the brace and slid his foot from the stirrup. When I was on the steps last winter, I healed a young warrior who had fallen from his horse on a grueling hunt. The wound was nearly the same as yours. His tribe devised the brace for him before I got there, since he was even less inclined to remain indoors than you. Kaol snorted, running a hand through his hair. Irene lifted his foot and began to rotate it, mindful of the horse he sat atop. Getting him to do any of the exercising, the therapy, was an ordeal. He hated being cooped up in his gear and wanted to feel the fresh air on his face. So, just to give myself a moment's peace, I let him get into the saddle, ride a bit, and then we'd do the exercises while he was astride. Only in exchange for later doing more comprehensive exercises in the tent. But he made such progress while astride that it became a main part of our treatment. Irene gently bent and straightened his leg. I know you can't feel much beyond your toes.
Nothing.
But I want you to focus on wriggling them, as much as you can. Along with the rest of your leg, but concentrate on your feet while I do this. He fell silent, and she didn't bother to look up as she moved his leg, going through what exercises she could with the horse beneath him. The solid weight of his leg was enough to get her sweating, but she kept at it, stretching and bending, pivoting and rolling. And beneath his boots, the thick black leather shifting. His toes indeed wriggled and pushed. Good, Irene told him. Keep at it. His toes strained against the leather again.
The steps. That's where the Coggins people originally hailed from.
She went through another full set of the exercises, making sure his toes were moving the entire time, before she answered. Setting his leg back within the brace and stirrup, giving the horse plenty of space as she went around its front and unbuckled his other leg, she said,
Yes. A beautiful, pristine land. The grassy hills roll on forever, interrupted only by sparse pine forests and a few bald mountains.
Irene grunted against the weight of his leg as she began the same set of exercises.
Did you know that the first Coggin conquered the continent with only 100,000 men? And that he did it in 4 years?
She took in the awakening city around them, marveling.
I knew about his people's history, about the Dargon. But when I went to the steps, Kashin told me.
She fell silent, wishing she could take back the last bit.
The prince went with you?
A calm, casual question. She tapped his foot in silent order to keep wriggling his toes. Kaol obeyed with a huff of laughter.
Kashin and Hafiza came with me. We were there over a month.
Irene flexed his foot up and down, working through the repetitive motions with slow, deliberate care. Magic aided in the healing, yes, but the physical element of it played equally as important a role.
Are you moving your toes as much as you can?
A snort. Yes, mistress.
She hid her smile, stretching his leg as far as his hip would allow, and rotating it in small circles.
I assume that trip to the steps was when Prince Kashin poured his heart out.
Irene nearly dropped his leg, but instead glared up at him, finding those rich brown eyes full of dry humor.
It is none of your business.
You do love to say that, for someone who seems so intent on demanding I tell her everything.
She rolled her eyes and went back to bending his leg at the knee, stretching and easing.
Kashin was one of the first friends I made here, she said after a long moment. One of my first friends anywhere.
Ah.
A pause.
And when he wanted more than friendship.
Irene lowered Kaol's leg at last, buckling it back into the brace and wiping the dust from his boots off her hands. She set her hands on her hips as she peered at him, squinting against the rising light.
I didn't want more than that. I told him as much.
And that is that. Kaol's lips twitched toward a smile, and Irene at last approached her waiting mare, hauling herself into the saddle. When she straightened, arranging the skirts of her dress over her legs, she said to him,
"My aim is to return to Fenharrow, to help where I am needed most. I felt nothing strong enough for caution to warrant yielding that dream."
Understanding filled his eyes, and he opened his mouth, as if he might say something about it. But he just nodded, smiling again, and said,
"I'm glad you didn't."
She lifted a brow in question, and his smile grew.
"Where would I be without you here to bark orders at me?"
Irene scowled, scooping up the reins and steering the horse toward the gates, as she said sharply,
"Let me know if you start to feel any discomfort or tingling in that saddle, and try to keep your toes moving as often as you can."
To his credit, he didn't object. He only said with that half-smile,
"Lead the way, Irene Towers."
And though she told herself not to, a little smile tugged on Irene's mouth as they rode into the awakening city.
Chapter 20. With most of the city down by the docks for the sunrise ceremony to honor Tahome, the streets were quiet. Kaol supposed only the sickest would be bedbound today, which was why, when they approached a slender house on a sunny, dusty street, he wasn't at all surprised to be greeted by violent coughing before they'd even reached the door. Well, before Irene had even reached the door. Without the chair, he'd remain atop the horse. But Irene didn't so much as comment on it as she dismounted, tied her mare to the hitching post down the street, and strode for the house. He kept shifting his toes every so often, as much as he could manage within the boots. The movement alone he knew was a gift, but it required more concentration than he'd expected. More energy, too. Kaol was still flexing them when an elderly woman opened the house door, sighing to see Irene, and speaking in very slow Halha. For Irene to understand, apparently, because the healer replied in the language as she entered the house and left the door ajar. Her use of the words tentative and unwieldy. Better than his own. From the street, he could see through the house's open windows and door to the little bed tucked just under the painted sill, as if to keep the patient in the fresh air. It was occupied by an old man, the source of that coughing. Irene spoke to the crone before striding to the old man, pulling up a squat three-legged stool. Kaol stroked his horse's neck, wriggling his toes again, while Irene took the man's withered hand and pressed another to his brow. Each movement was gentle, calm, and her face. There was a soft smile on it, one he'd never seen before. Irene said something he couldn't hear to the old woman wringing her hands behind them, then rolled down the thin blanket covering the man. Kaol cringed at the lesions crusting his chest and stomach. Even the old woman did. But Irene didn't so much as blink, her serene countenance never shifting, as she lifted a hand before her. White light simmered along her fingers and palm. The old man, though unconscious, sucked in a breath as she laid a hand on his chest, right over the worst of those sores. For long minutes, she only laid her hand there, brows scrunched, light flowing from her palm to the man's chest. And when she lifted her hand, the old woman wept, kissed Irene's hands one after the other. Irene only smiled, kissing the woman's sagging cheek, and bade her farewell, giving what had to be firm instructions for the man's continued care. It was only after Irene shut the door behind her that the beautiful smile faded, that she studied the dusty cobblestones and her mouth tightened, as if she'd forgotten he was there. His horse nickered, and her head snapped up.
"Are you all right?"
he asked. She only unhitched her horse and mounted, chewing on her lower lip as they started into a slow walk.
He has a disease that will not go gently. We have been battling it for 5 months now. That it flared up so badly this time.
She shook her head. Disappointed. With herself.
It doesn't have a cure?
It has been defeated in other patients, but sometimes the host. He is very old. Even when I think I've purged it from him, it comes back.
She blew out a breath.
At this point, I feel as if I'm just buying him time, not giving him a solution.
He studied the tightness in her jaw. Someone who demanded excellence from herself, while perhaps not expecting the same from others, or even hoping for it.
Kaol found himself saying,
Are there any other patients you need to see to?
She frowned toward his legs. Toward the big toe he pushed against the top of his boot, the leather shifting with the movement.
We can return to the palace.
I like to be outside,
he blurted.
The streets are empty. Let me...
He couldn't finish.
Irene seemed to get it, though. There's a young mother across the city.
A long, long ride away.
She's recovering from a hard labor 2 weeks ago. I'd like to visit her.
Kaol tried not to look too relieved.
Then let's go.
So they went. The streets remained empty.
The ceremony, Irene told him, lasting until mid-morning. Even though the Empire's gods had been cobbled together, most people participated in their holidays. Religious tolerance, she'd said, was something the very first Coggan had championed, and all who had come after him, too. Oppressing various beliefs only led to discord within his empire, so he'd absorbed them all. Some, literally, twining multiple gods into one, but always allowing those who wished to practice the freedom to do so without fear. Kaol, in turn, told Irene about the other use he'd learned while reading up on the history of the Coggan rule. In other kingdoms, where religious minorities were ill-treated, he found many willing spies. She'd known that already, and had asked him if he'd ever used spies for his own position. He told her no, though he didn't reveal that he'd once had men who worked covertly, but they weren't like the spies Adian and Ren Alsbrook had employed, that he himself had worked within Rifthold this spring and summer. But talking about his former guards, he fell silent. She'd remained quiet after that, as if sensing his silence was not from lack of conversation. She brought him into a quarter of the city that was full of small gardens and parks. The houses modest yet well-kept, firmly middle class. It reminded him a bit of Rifthold, and yet cleaner, brighter. Even with the streets so quiet this morning, it teemed with life. Especially at the elegant little house they stopped before, where a merry-eyed young woman spotted them from the window a level above. She called out to Irene and Halha, then vanished inside.
Well, that answers that question,
Irene murmured, just as the front door opened, and that woman appeared, a plump babe in her arms. The mother paused upon seeing Kaol, but he offered a polite bob of his head. The woman smiled prettily at him, but it turned out right devious as she faced Irene and waggled her eyebrows. Irene laughed, and the sound. Beautiful as the sound was, it was nothing like the smile on her face. The delight. He'd never seen a face so lovely. Not as Irene dismounted and took the chubby baby, the portrait of newborn health, from the mother's outstretched arms.
Oh, she's beautiful,
she cooed, brushing a finger over a round cheek. The mother beamed.
Fat as a dirt grub,
she spoke in Kaol's own tongue, either because Irene used it with her, or from noticing his own features, so different from the various norms here in Antica.
Hungry as a pig, too.
Irene bobbed and swayed with the baby, cooing at the girl.
The feeding is going well?
She'd be on my breast day and night if I let her,
the mother groused, not at all embarrassed to be discussing such things with him present.
Irene chuckled, her smile growing as she let a tiny hand wrap around her finger.
She looks healthy as can be,
she observed, then looked over the mother.
And you?
I've been following the regimen you gave me. The baths helped.
No bleeding.
A shake of the head. Then she seemed to notice him, because she said a bit more quietly.
And Kaol suddenly found the buildings down the street very interesting. How long until I can, you know, with my husband?
Irene snorted.
Give it another 7 weeks.
The woman let out a squawk of outrage.
But you healed me!
And you nearly bled out before I could.
Words that brooked no argument.
Give your body time to rest. Other healers would tell you 8 more weeks at a minimum, but try it at 7. If there is any discomfort.
I know,
the woman said, waving a hand.
It's just been a while.
Irene let out another laugh, and Kaol found himself gazing toward her as the healer said,
Well, you can wait a little longer at this point.
The woman gave Irene a wry smile as she took back her burbling baby.
I certainly hope you enjoy yourself, since I can't.
Kaol caught her meaningful glance in his direction before Irene did. And he got no small amount of smug satisfaction from watching Irene blink, then stiffen, then go red.
What?
Oh. Oh, no.
The way she spat that no. He took no satisfaction in that. The woman only laughed, hefting the baby a bit higher as she headed into her charming house.
I certainly would.
The door shut. Still red, Irene turned to him, distinctly not meeting his eyes.
She's opinionated.
Kaol chuckled.
I hadn't realized that I was a firm no.
She glared at him, hauling herself onto her mare.
I don't share a bed with patients. And you're with Captain Philique,
she added quickly.
And you're...
Not in fit form to pleasure a woman.
He was shocked he said it. But again, more than a tad smug to see her eyes flare.
No,
Irene said, somehow going redder.
Certainly not that, but you're... You.
I'm trying not to be insulted.
She waved a hand, looking everywhere but at him.
You know what I mean.
That he was a man from Otterlin? That he'd served the king? He certainly did. But he said, deciding to have mercy on her.
I was joking, Irene. I am with Nezrin.
She swallowed, still blushing like mad.
Where is she today?
She went to attend the ceremony with her family.
Nezrin hadn't invited him, and he claimed he wanted to put off their own ride through the city. Yet here he now was. Irene nodded distantly.
Are you going to the party tonight, at the palace?
Yes. Are you?
Another nod. Stilted silence. Then she said,
I'm afraid to work on you today. Just in case we lose track of time again and miss the party.
Would it be so bad if we did?
She eyed him while they turned a corner.
It would offend some of them. If it didn't offend the Lady of the Great Deep herself.
I'm not sure which scares me more. He chuckled again as Irene went on.
Hassar lent me a dress, so I have to go,
or risk her wrath. Some shadow passed over her face, and he was about to ask about it when she said,
Do you want to have a tour?
He stared at her, at the offer she'd thrown his way.
I'll admit I don't know that much about the history. But my work has taken me to every quarter, so I can at least keep us from getting lost.
Yes,
he breathed.
Yes.
Irene's smile was tentative, quiet. But she led him onward, the streets beginning to fill, as the ceremonies ended and celebrating began. As laughing people streamed down the avenue and alleys, music pouring from everywhere, the smell of food and spices wrapping around him. He forgot about the heat, the baking sun, forgot to keep moving his toes every now and then, as they rode through the winding quarters of the city, as he marveled at the domed temples and free libraries. As Irene showed him the paper money they used, mulberry bark backed in silk, in lieu of unwieldy coins. She bought him her favorite treats, a confection made from carob, and offered smiles to anyone who came her way. Rarely to him, though. There was no street she balked at turning down, no neighborhood or alley she seemed to fear. A god city, yes, and also a city of learning, of light and comfort and wealth. When the sun reached its zenith, she led them into a lush public garden, its overhanging trees and vines blocking out the brutal rays. They rode down the labyrinth of walkways, the garden near empty thanks to everyone now partaking in the midday meal. Raised beds of flowers overflowed with blossoms. Hanging ferns swayed in the cool breeze off the sea. Birds called to one another from the cover of the drooping fronds overhead.
"Do you think," Irene said after long minutes of quiet, "that one day,"
she gnawed on her bottom lip,
"that we could have a place like this?"
"In Otterlin?"
"In anywhere," she said. "But yes, in Otterlin. In Fenharrow. I heard Eelway's cities were once as fine as this, before."
Before the shadow between them. Before the shadow in his heart.
"They were,"
Kaol said, sealing away the thought of the princess who'd lived in those cities, who'd loved them, even as the scar on his face seemed to twinge. But he considered her question, and from those shadows of his memory, he heard Adi and Ash River's voice.
"What do you suppose the people on other continents, across all those seas, think of us? Do you think they hate us, or pity us for what we do to each other? Perhaps it's just as bad there. Perhaps it's worse. But I have to believe it's better. Somewhere. It's better than this."
He wondered if he'd ever get to tell Adian that he'd found such a place. Perhaps he would tell Dorian what he'd seen here. Help rebuild the ruins of Rifthold, of his kingdom, into something like this. He realized he hadn't finished. That Irene was still waiting, as she brushed aside a trailing vine of small purple flowers.
"Yes,"
he said at last, at the wariness hiding that tiny burning kernel of hope in her eyes.
"I believe we can build this for ourselves one day,"
he added,
"if we survive this war."
If he could leave here with an army behind him to challenge Erewhon. Time pressed on him, smothering him. Faster. He had to move faster with everything. Irene scanned his face in the heavy heat of the garden.
"You love your people very much."
Kaol nodded, unable to find the words. She opened her mouth as if she'd say something, but closed it, then said,
"Even the people of Fenharrow were not blameless with their actions this past decade."
Kaol tried not to look at the faint scar across her throat. Had it been one of her own countrymen who had? She sighed, studying the rose garden wilting in the blistering heat.
"We should head back, before the crowds get impossible."
He wondered what she'd thought of saying a moment ago, but decided against. What caused that shadow to lurk in her eyes? But Kaol only followed her, all those words hanging between them. They parted ways at the palace, the halls packed with servants readying for the evening's festivities. Irene went right to find Hassar in the dress, and bath, she'd been promised, and Kaol returned to his own suite, to wash off the dust and sweat and find something suitable to wear. No sign of Nezrin until she'd returned midway through his bath, shouted that she was taking one of her own, and closed the door to her suite. He'd opted for his teal jacket, and waited in the hall for Nezrin to emerge. When she did, he blinked at the well-cut amethyst jacket and pants.
He hadn't seen a sign of her captain's uniform for days. And wasn't about to ask, as he said,
"You look beautiful."
Nezrin smiled, her glossy hair still damp from the bath.
"You don't look so bad yourself."
She seemed to note the color on his face and asked,
"You were in the sun today?"
Her slight accent had deepened, adding more of a twirl to certain sounds.
"I helped Irene with some patients around the city."
Nezrin smiled as they headed into the hallway.
"I'm glad to hear it." Not a word about the ride and visit he'd delayed with her.
He wondered if she had even remembered. He still hadn't told her about his toes. But as they reached the great hall of the palace, later. They'd discuss it all later. The great hall of the palace was a wonder. That was the only word for it. The party was not as large as he would have assumed. Only a few more people than the usual gathering of the viziers and royals. But no expense had been spared on the decorations. The feast. He gaped a bit, Nezrin doing the same, as they were led to their spots at the high table, an honor he was still surprised they received. The Coggin and his wife would not be joining them, he was told by Duva. Her mother had not been doing well these last few days, and wished to celebrate with her husband in private. No doubt seeing those mourning banners at last coming down had been difficult. And tonight likely wasn't the time to press the Coggin about their alliance anyway. A few more guests poured in, along with Hussar and Renya, arm in arm with Irene. When Irene had left him at the crossroads of one of the palace's main halls, she'd been gleaming with sweat and dust, her cheeks rosy, her hair curling slightly around her ears. Her dress, too, had been wrinkled from a day of riding, the hem coated in dust. Certainly not at all like what she wore now. He felt the attention of half the men at the table slide toward Hussar, toward Irene, as they entered. Trailed by two of the princess's servant girls. Hussar was smirking, Renya utterly stunning in ruby red. But Irene... For a beautiful woman clad in the finest clothes and jewels an empire could purchase, there was something resigned about her. Yes, her shoulders were back, her spine straight, but the smile that had hit him in the gut earlier was long gone. Hussar had dressed Irene in cobalt that brought out the warmth of her skin and set her brown hair glimmering as if it had indeed been gilded. The princess had even dusted cosmetics along Irene's face. Or perhaps the hint of color on her freckled cheeks was from the fact that the gown was cut low enough to reveal the lushness of her figure. Cut low and tight through the bodice. Irene's dresses certainly didn't hide her body. But the gown. He hadn't quite realized how slim her waist was. How her hips flared beneath it. How her other assets swelled above. He wasn't the only one taking a second glance. Sartak and Argon had leaned forward in their seats as their sister led Irene to the high table. Irene's hair had been left mostly down, only the sides swept back and pinned with combs of gold and ruby. Matching earrings dangled to brush the slender column of her throat.
"She looks regal,"
Nezrin murmured to him. Irene indeed looked like a princess. Albeit one heading to the gallows for how solemn her face was as they reached the table. Whatever contentment she'd possessed when they'd parted ways had since vanished upon the 2 hours she'd spent with Hussar. The princes stood to greet Irene this time, caution rising first. The healer on high's undeclared heir, a woman who would likely wield considerable power in this realm. They seemed to realize it. The depth of that implication. Argon especially, from the shrewd look he gave Irene. A woman of considerable power and beauty. He saw the word in Argon's eyes. Prize. Kaol's jaw tightened. Irene certainly didn't want the attentions of the handsomest of the princes. He couldn't imagine she'd be inclined to desire the affections of the other two. Argon opened his mouth to speak to Hussar. But the princess strode right to Kaol and Nezrin, and murmured in Nezrin's ear,
move.
Chapter 21. Nezrin blinked at Hasar. The princess smiled, cold as a snake, and clarified,
"It is not polite to only sit with your companion. We should have separated you two before now."
Nezrin glanced to him. Everyone watched. Kaol had no idea, absolutely none, what to say. Irene seemed inclined to melt into the green marble floor. Sartak cleared his throat.
"Join me here, Captain Falik."
Nezrin stood quickly, and Hasar beamed up at her. The princess patted the back of the seat Nezrin had vacated and crooned to Irene, lingering a few feet away.
"You sit here, in case you are needed."
Irene shot Kaol a look that might have been considered pleading, but he kept his face neutral and offered a closed-lipped smile. Nezrin found her seat beside Sartak, who had asked a vizier to move down the table, and Hasar, satisfied that the adjustments had been done to her liking, deemed that her own usual seats were not to her taste, and kicked out two viziers down by Argon. The second seat was for Renya, who gave her lover a mildly disapproving glance, but smiled to herself, as if it were typical. The meal resumed, and Kaol slid his attention to Irene. The vizier on her other side paid her no heed. Platters were passed around by servants, food and drink piled and poured. Kaol muttered under his breath,
"Do I want to know?"
Irene cut into the simmered lamb and saffron rice heaped on her golden plate.
"No."
He was willing to bet whatever shadows had been in her eyes earlier today, the thing she'd halted herself from saying to him. It went hand in hand with whatever was unfolding here. He peered down the table, to where Nezrin watched them, half listening to Sartak as the prince spoke about something Kaol could not hear over the clatter of silverware and discussion. He shot her an apologetic look. Nezrin threw him a warning one in answer, directed toward Hasar.
"Be careful." "How are your toes?" Irene said, taking tiny bites of her food.
He'd seen her devour the box of carob sweets she'd gotten for them atop their horses. The dainty eating here, for show.
"Active,"
he said with a half-smile, no matter that it had only been 2 hours since they'd last seen each other.
"Sensation?"
"A tingle."
"Good."
Her throat bobbed, that scar shifting with it. He knew they were being watched, listened to.
She did as well.
Irene's knuckles were white as she clenched her utensils, her back ramrod straight. No smile. Little light in her coal-lined eyes. Had the princess maneuvered them to sit together to talk? Or to manipulate caution into some sort of action? The prince was indeed watching, even while he engaged two gold-robed viziers in conversation. Kaol murmured to Irene,
"The role of pawn doesn't suit you."
Those gold-brown eyes flickered.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
But she did. The words weren't meant for him. He scrambled for topics to get them through the meal.
"When do you meet with the ladies for their next lesson?"
Some of the tension drained from Irene's shoulders as she said,
2 weeks. It would normally be next week, but many of them have their examinations then and will be focused on studying."
"Some exercise and fresh air might be helpful."
"I'd say so, but to them, these tests are life and death." "They certainly were to me."
"Do you have any more remaining?"
She shook her head, her jeweled earrings catching the light.
"I completed my final one 2 weeks ago. I am an official healer of the Tore."
A bit of self-effacing humor danced in her eyes. He lifted his goblet to her.
"Congratulations."
A shrug, but she nodded in thanks.
"Though Hafiza thinks to test me one last time."
"Ah, so I am indeed an experiment."
A piss-poor attempt at making light of their argument days ago, of that rawness that had ripped a hole through him.
No, Irene said quietly, quickly. You have very little to do with it. This last unofficial test. It is about me.
He wanted to ask, but there